This episode is brought to you by State Farm. If you're a small business owner, you know that it isn't just your business, it's your life. And whatever your business might be, you want someone who understands. That's why you might want to check out State Farm Small Business Insurance. Why? Because State Farm agents are small business owners too, living and working in your community. That means they know what it takes to help you personalize your policies for your small business needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hi, everyone. This is Pivot from New York Magazine and the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Kara Swisher.
And I am Scott Galloway. And Kara, I am pretty fly for a white guy.
I knew there'd be a fly joke. Oh, my
God. Come on.
I want to start a band, you and me, called Pink Eye and the Fly. What do you think?
Pink Eye and the Fly.
It was disturbing.
You know,
it was hard to look away.
I just can't tolerate it when you objectify and comment on the looks of a white man. I'm just sick of it.
We've had it.
We're sick of being objectified.
The fly was, you know, a fly landed on Hillary Clinton in one of the last debates, if you recall.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
There was a fly. It's really interesting. I mean, the debate was whatever.
It
was
40-ton seal landed on her.
Yeah, I know. The debate was whatever. It's so interesting. What was interesting to me to watch the reaction today, one, that Trump then did an interview that stomped all over any good news about the debate. I mean, he didn't ruin himself in the way Trump does on stage. And then Trump managed to say 26 things, all of which are controversial.
Mm-hmm.
And step all over it, which is what he does all the time, essentially. What did you think of the debate? I think it was fine.
You know what? I really liked it, actually. I think, I mean, I watch CNN, and it does look as if, according to the Post polls, that she won, especially among women. But
yeah.
I thought the vice president did a good job. I thought she did a good job. But more than anything, it just made me feel like, okay, that's America. It was two people going at it. They were respectful of one another. I thought the moderator did a good job.
I didn't think she got him to answer the questions. They kept not answering. I mean, that's typical debate, but I think someone should say, hey, that's not the question I asked. Please answer it.
But the problem is they should have said at the outset, you'll have 2 minutes uninterrupted except by me if you don't answer the question.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
You know who I miss? Who would have been the best moderator for something like this?
Gwen Ifill.
Sam Donaldson.
Oh, yeah.
He just didn't take that crap in debates. He'd be like, sir, please answer the question. I mean, you're not answering the question. That's all fine and good, but you're not answering the question. But I thought it was a good debate. I thought, and only that, just Democrats. We went into this optimistically, which is sort of dangerous. So it was a good night for us instead of going in nervous.
Right.
And I came out of the first debate with total PTSD. I just thought it was so rattling. And this one was a good debate. So I felt good about Senator Harris. I felt good about Vice President Pence, and I felt good about America. What did you think?
It was fine. I don't think it matters a scooch. You know what I mean? The fly was the most interesting part of the debate, essentially. And it was metaphoric in a bad way for the Republicans, like, you know, you saw the tweets and stuff. But I think that hardly matters. I think it's just a sidelight. They didn't answer the questions, which was frustrating. He was incredibly polite to her, which was interesting way to handle it. I think he knew he couldn't be sort of dismissive to a woman.
Yeah.
And she knew she couldn't be too prosecutorial, right? She couldn't be too offensive to men. I think that was kind of what was going on. The interrupting part, I don't know. That was the moderator's fault. And I thought, you know, he just kept talking and plowing through, which I think is what you do in these. There's like he must have been taught like game issues around the debate. The only thing I thought is he didn't, he's such kind of a weird countenance that I think he needs to understand he's being watched all the time. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't seem to be aware there was a TV aimed at him. And I didn't care about her making faces. I don't care. He made faces too. I don't care about that. I don't think that matters.
Yeah, I do think, though, I agree with you as it relates to this election. It's unimportant. But I do think that debate was somewhat historic. I felt it was historic. And then I was sitting there watching Pence.
Yeah.
It really was. This election does come down to, you know, kind of the Republicans are, we are the white patriarchy, and mm-hmm. we are not perfect, but it's worked really well for a really long time. And you're losing the white heteronormative patriarchy. And the Browning of America is a threat, both in terms of what's happening literally with immigrants and just metaphorically in terms of this political correctness and taking us away from American values. That's basically what the Republican Party is saying right now.
Yeah.
And he represents that. Pence represents that. And then you have a woman of color who's the daughter of an immigrant who is, you know, a district oversaw the largest Department of Justice or the second largest.
Yeah.
And she is, it really felt like the baton, assuming that Biden and Harris win, the baton is being passed in America. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, it's kind of their moment. And this is where America officially says, all right, it's no longer about the white guy.
Yeah.
It's so I do think we might look back on this and think that's when the baton was actually handed over, I think.
Yeah, I think he was fine. I think it was about 2024. The whole thing was about 2024. And by the way, there's two things I don't forgive for Mike Pence. His ridiculous stance on gay people, which is just, he has so many ridiculous stances.
I do think electroshock therapy is a viable treatment for homosexuality care.
I'll never look at him and be able to engage with him. You want to just make
shock
go ahead,
therapy. Make yeah.
He's
that,
crazy
that'll
about that.
Fix it. That'll, and then, all the gay people I know, that'll
we
work.
We don't need fixing, sweetheart.
That'll work.
So, and then the other issue is that he sort of stands by and lets Trump stomp all over him. And so many, he just seems to have just take it. And it's just a weird thing. The only thing I did think was offensive, and I think it does matter, is his wife get us on stage without a mask. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
can
terrible.
She just put
terrible.
On a friggin' mask?
Terrible.
Like, what is that, her little moment of freedom? Like, it's just, yeah, it's just terrible. Like, find your freedom elsewhere, lady. You know, it was really, I found that offensive. Anyway,
what's offensive case, though? Just about masking? My kids
just
are.
Just ask people to do it. Just do it. 15 minutes. Just do it. Just
stop.
But
here's the thing is, they're playing to a large segment of America because what I found out this
ridiculous.
Week in my school,
yeah,
supposedly there's a, or my kids' school, I should say, there's a petition going around. We're blessed. We've been able to go back in person. They have a lot mm-hmm. of resources. They've been very aggressive. They're doing rapid
right.
testing, a plexiglass. And, you know, we're blessed in that there's not a lot of density. And so far, knock on wood, everything's going fine. And there's now a petition, supposedly, for the kids not to have to wear masks.
Oh, it's probably some cranky parents. There's always a cranky parent in every school about whatever of his snacks.
Yeah, I think there's more than one cranky parent.
Whatever. It's just
God,
like,
it's so
come on, you've been in the politics of kindergarten or sort of rather, like, I remember one about, I don't remember. It was something so dumb and I refused to even call back. Like, come on. Like,
you're just above it. You're above those kindergarten politics.
Stuff.
You're above it.
Kindergarten politics. But listen, Trump continued to use Twitter to govern. He was crazy on the Twitter this week. Really crazy on the Twitter.
What do you mean this week?
This week was, it's the steroids talking. I mean, and he halted the COVID stimulus package. The markets didn't like it. Then he reneged the decision. And then he was obsessed with
he looks terrible.
The FBI
terrible
went on. And then the insulting Barr. It's just... Yeah. Steroids are some drug, I'll tell you that. That's all I got to say.
Yeah,
are you
I don't
on
know.
Steroids?
I think that's the real Trump. No, I should be, though. I would like to. I'd like to be jacked.
My God.
I would like
you
to be jacked. I'd like to own the most valuable company in the world, be jacked,
impossible.
And be dating, you know, dating somebody. I'm in.
No, you on steroids would be a nightmare for me. Do you know that? Do you understand?
You think? Really? I could use
a little
pep. Have
you ever taken steroids? To be honest with me.
Have I ever taken steroids? No, I've never taken steroids. I've taken testosterone. I went to one of these Florida doctors. Is that a steroid?
Yes.
Other than I started growing a little.
The biggest one.
My balls shrank to the size of peas, and I started getting hair on my eyeballs. But other than that, I felt really good.
Why did you take that?
Because I live in Florida, and because I'm dying, and I don't want to die, and I'm having a midlife crisis of all midlife that will end all midlife crises. That's the bad news.
Is testosterone a steroid?
The bad news is I'm in the midst of a full-blown midlife crisis. The good news is I think I'm going to grow out of it in 30 or 40 years. Anyways, I did three of these testosterone shots in my ass.
How did you feel?
I felt jumpy.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. I just didn't. I thought. And then I went to my doctor in New York, and I'm like, I'm on T therapy. That's what they call it, T therapy. And he's like, what the fuck do you want testosterone for?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know. I want to feel young again. It's like, dude, you don't need testosterone. Get off it.
Get off it.
Anyways, yeah. I only did.
Men lose their testosterone over time. Women get more of it, I think.
That's a news alert, really?
Yeah.
That's a hot flash.
Yeah, speaking of hot flashes.
Word is we do lose our testosterone. The T does decline. What do you know? Something bad happens as you get older. What a shocker.
Yeah.
But anyway, a lot of guys are on it.
I don't recommend it. I'm really looking forward to next week.
Have you ever had shots of testosterone?
No, I haven't had testosterone. No. I'm trying to think if there was
anything.
Illness. Sometimes they use them for different illnesses, and I don't think so. I would have remembered that. Sometimes steroids are used for real medical procedures, but in this case, it's come down. It's going to be quite a crash. It's going to be something else, unless they just keep it on them, and that's really unhealthy for someone that age. Anyway, lastly, very quickly, an important scoop from Recode reporters Jason Del Rey and Shireen Ghaffari. Amazon is investing in technology to track and counter the threat of worker unionization. Oh, Amazon.
What do you think about that, Carol?
I think it's what a surprise. And, you know, it's inevitable. Amazon will be unionized. I'm sorry, Amazon. You can fight and, you know, you're going to be unionized eventually. Yeah.
Back to the testosterone. The thing about the testosterone was...
Speaking of testosterone. Yeah,
when you take T therapy, supposedly from that point, every time you orgasm, your voice gets deeper. And I turned into Barry White already.
Oh, right.
I was just Barry... I'm already Barry White.
Oh, my God.
Okay, that's good testosterone
humor.
Good to
know the drugs are on. Next week on Monday, we'll discuss your use of other drugs. Anyway, I am drug-free.
Then we're going to need a longer show.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to need a longer show.
It's so interesting because I like take no drugs, and you take a lot of drugs. It's just an interesting
thing. Well, truth be told, when you joke as much as I do about taking drugs, it means you don't take a lot of drugs,
I don't agree with you.
I don't take a lot of drugs.
Do. Anyway, all right.
Why are you holding? I'm down. You holding?
You know what?
You holding?
That looks like there's a fly on your head. No.
There you go.
It's totally safe.
There you go. I'm sorry, I got us off track. Jason
Del
Rey.
Where would the fly land on your head?
More original Recode reporting. More original Recode reporting. What happened?
It was great. It was a great
report. What did dreamy Jason Del Rey find out?
He found out that Amazon's tracking unionization, of course. Of course they would. It's a threat to their business plan. It's a great story. You should read it. Okay, we're going to go on to big stories. The House Judiciary Committee, no surprise, published their report from 15-month investigation into the Big Four's antitrust issues. As a reminder, the CEOs from Google, Apple, Facebook, and Amazon all testified in front of Congress. We discussed that on the show. Based on the report, the House Democrats proposed a massive overhaul of U.S. laws that can make it easier to break up giant tech companies and slow their growth, probably all companies, not just tech companies. But according to the New York Times, there was disagreement among Democrats and Republicans on how to regulate the companies. The Republicans thought that was a nuclear option. And over to the right, Jim Jordan was mad they didn't discuss conservative bias. But the others were more focused on the relief that was sought. While you were out in August, Stephanie Ruhle and I talked with Representative David Cicilline about that. He was all over the news talking about it. So what do you think that means? Did you look at the report? I certainly did. What did you think about it?
Okay, I read the report. Okay,
right.
I thought the report was very simple and straightforward, that Facebook has a monopoly, that Amazon abuses its retail partners, that Google with a 93%. I mean, it just kind of stated the obvious. Now, the question is, what actually happens? Did they use it as a framework to pass new laws? But it was simple. It was elegant. It was common sense. So good for them.
Yeah. So what do you think will happen?
I don't know. I've had my heart broken around this several times, but I do think there's a lot of momentum. It feels like something is going to happen. I think that these guys are so smart. I think other than Zuckerberg, who's really going to cling to this and go to war, I think the others are going to come to some sort of accommodation, or they're going to prophylactically spin something. Because I think they realize they would rather decide how this happens and have it be done to them.
This is my column this week in the New York Times. Yes, it should. They should go along with it, as you have said.
And their stocks will go up. So. Yeah. If Bezos becomes the largest shareholder in the most valuable company in the world, and that is a recently spun cloud company called AWS, that's not the worst thing in the world to happen to him. If all of a sudden, if YouTube trades on its own or Google Cloud trades on its own, that's not the worst thing to happen to Google. So, I said last week, and you said that you didn't think it was going to happen because you thought it could all be undone. Mm-hmm. But I've said I thought that actually they might come to some sort of agreements before the election, such that Bill Barr and Donald Trump could wave some sort of, October surprise victory. But I think it's coming. What'll be interesting is whether it happens to them, whether this results in loss. Supposedly there's all sorts of partisan squabbling already. Well, go figure. But yeah, this is going to happen. This is blown by any reasonable scrutiny, any reasonable benchmark of previous intervention around antitrust. What will be interesting is if there'll be regulation for the App Store.
Or an overhaul of the antitrust laws. I think that's really where the focus should be.
We're going to go Brandeisian. We're going to go all Brandeisian.
Brandeisian? Okay. Well, we need an overhaul of the antitrust laws to really reflect today. And it's not just, by the way, it's not just tech. It's all a lot of stuff. There's, you know, I was talking to someone at the Justice Department. They were saying there's all kinds of weird, like, monopolies in strange places. I forget there was one that they were talking about. But, you know, the idea of what is consumer harm, that it should be rewritten, is an important thing. And one thing people don't realize is the slowness of this. You and I always complain about the slowness, but these are steps that they need to take. They need to do the investigation. They've got to look like they're legislating, which this is, which is to take time to do investigations. And then it's just essentially a strong arm back and forth over negotiations over how it's going to go down. I do think these companies understand, except for, you're right, Facebook, that they do understand this is going to happen to them, and they need to sort of be in the right place to get either the least amount happen to them or what they would prefer of the inevitable.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's, you know, whenever you want to cop a play, right, it's the best deal they're going to have is the one they shape.
Right.
And they're in a position to do that. So we'll see, but we're starting to hear, Mark, Senator Warner is starting to take a more active role or be more vocal. And I think I like him. I think he's a very reasoned, thoughtful voice. He has a background in technology, so he's sort of well-versed or well-suited to be a spokesperson for this. It'll just be, but to your point, does antitrust go more Brandeisian where consumer harm's not the test, it's market power? You know, what are we going to do around? I think the really interesting, tricky one is going to be Apple. I think the other one, anyways, we'll see.
Yeah, I agree. It was interesting, though, that Amazon did put out, like, this is not consumer harm. They're arguing a thing from the past. I think that was, I was looking at their statements. Everybody loves using Amazon. That's not the point here. And I think that's, they're sort of arguing for 20 years ago, essentially. And so they really all should get fast forward on this and right away. And right away, why not? You can control your fate in this kind of stuff. And they will have a lot of, you know, I don't think given all the other problems we have, politicians want to fight this one as much. Mm-hmm. And if they let the politicians do it, it's going to be with an ugly looking knife, you know, a dull knife that's going to cut in the wrong way. And so I think we have to have the companies part of this, consumer groups, politicians, and citizens, like, to start to do this right. And I think it would be a really interesting thing if they could not do it this old way. What's interesting is this upcoming DOJ lawsuit still isn't coming. It was supposed to be last week. It was supposed to be announced. There was some pushback by prosecutors.
I think they're going to release it the same day they release their healthcare plan, Kara.
Oh, yeah, right. We're waiting for that. And Infrastructure Week, probably taking place during Infrastructure Week. I mean, I think the problem is that Trump keeps stepping all over this stuff. You know, as there's no way to govern when was screamy. You know, he's screaming on the lawn.
This has been such an, I mean, it's, the lawn, this has been the worst 30 days. That? I'm trying to think. I don't think there's been a worse 30 days for a president. I don't.
I'm not understanding it. It's not. I don't know. He must have some, like, young guy there, and he just yells at him to do things, and then they do them. That's my.
I think it's falling apart. I really do. I think when you keep, you know, Maureen Dowd sort of summarized it perfectly after Walter Reed, after that ridiculous press conference, and basically the erosion in the credibility that Walter Reed has spent decades building through outstanding service of thousands of talented people. And basically, Donald Trump manages to, you know, totally screw up their brand by forcing this doctor to go out and lie. And Maureen Dowd summarized it as, like, is there anything he can't ruin? Or is there anything he doesn't ruin? Yeah. And when you think about the number of people that we're dealing not only with the B team, they're out to lunch. There's no one there.
No.
I think if you look at the operations of the government, if you look at the communications, if you look at the inconsistency, you think, oh, it seems like it's run by an old man who is sick. And what do you know? That's what's going on right now.
Yeah.
It's just, I think chaos is the wrong word. It's just flat, irrational. Think about everything that's happened the last 4 weeks. It has been
crazy.
a total crazy town.
And it was
been
crazy
a total meltdown. You know what story you didn't bring up we were talking about last week? Did you see that your buddy, has announced that he's a large shareholder in Disney?
Who is my buddy?
Dan Loeb.
Oh, is he? He's not my
Dan
buddy.
Loeb wrote a letter to Disney announcing he owns, I think, about...
See? You knew that was happening. He must have called you.
1% over $1 billion in shares.
What does
and this
he
is
want?
What's interesting. He's urging the company, unlike traditional activists, he's urging the company to cancel the dividend and to massively invest in original content such that they can go toe-to-toe better with Netflix. So Dan Loeb is kind of, you know, he built his reputation with sort of a poison pen, and the pen has gotten, I would argue, a little bit more elegant. It's a Mont Blanc pen now. It's a Mont Blanc.
All right.
But he's saying that Disney needs to cancel the dividend, and that's unusual. Activists are typically like, whatever financial engineering gets my stock up right now, return more money to shareholders.
Yeah.
But he's saying that Disney needs to increase their budget.
Shall look upon it.
Yes, so Disney now has an activist and a vocal shareholder. It's starting.
You can turn on them in a
Disney is starting. Turning on the mouse.
Yeah, turning on the mouse. All right, well, that's interesting. All right, in terms of getting back to the story about these antitrust, I think what's interesting about Trump is that he, like, look, where did TikTok go? Where did any of this go? So none of it matters until after the election. Let's just be clear.
Like, yeah, it's
there's nothing going to happen on TikTok, nothing going to happen on this. And then we'll see. Essentially, I think that's where we are. But let's go to a quick break to talk about Facebook making moves to take down QAnon and also deal with election issues and a listener mail question from Hawaii.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You've heard it before. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. But it's more than just a tagline. Because State Farm agents are small business owners themselves who live and work in your community. And if you're in the market for small business insurance, who better to work with than an agent who understands what it takes? State Farm agents can help you create a personalized insurance plan that fits your small business needs and budget. Talk to your local State Farm agent today about small business insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
And we're back. Facebook had a massive purge of QAnon accounts this week. Long time coming. Too late. Too little. On Tuesday, the company said it would remove any group, page, or account that identified as QAnon, a sprawling right-wing conspiracy group that believes the world is being run by a cult of pedophiles who are out to get Donald Trump. This is a major, there's a lot more that goes on with those people, but that's basically what they believe. This is a major hardening of Facebook's ban on QAnon, and they announced in August the companies faced a lot of criticism that those efforts were not enough. Of course, they were not enough. They're sort of trying to clean up a toxic waste spill that let's sit there for the longest time. So why now? Why is he doing this? Why will this work now versus August? Talk to me about this, Scott.
Well, this is clearly a function of that fantastic fiduciary oversight board they put together.
Haven't met yet.
And supposedly the alternative oversight board that
That's
people
me.
Put together has yeah. been taken down, or Facebook is trying to get it taken, wiped off the internet. Thank you, Facebook.
No, I just moderated some of them. They were very smart. It was a really august group of people, I have to say. They pulled together a nice group.
Group of people. I think you're even wider than Pence. A very august group, here there, good lady.
No.
It's the winter of our white
diverse,
miscontent.
Actually, it was a little too American is what it was. Anyway, in any case, any insights about this? I mean, QAnon, it would seem like it's a layup that you look good banning those people, but Facebook took its sweet time.
Look, as a general rule, you want to always, the last 5 minutes of any interaction you have are the most important 5 minutes. And I always tell the kids in my class that when you're leaving a meeting, when you're leaving a social event, when you've had dinner with someone, whatever it is, if you're, even if you're an introvert like me, try and turn it on the last 5 minutes. Try and be not you. Try and be friendly. Try, if you're at a meeting or if you're at, wherever it is, and you do something, think about leaving on a good note, because that's what, it's almost important. And also there's a lesson here. When you leave a company, how you leave, are you gracious, are you thoughtful, is as important to your reputation as the 10 years you spent at the company. So leaving is really important. I think Facebook is trying to go into, I think, quite frankly, all of this is because of Biden-Harris. I think, a new administration is coming to town. We don't have the benefit of our unholy alliance with Trump. The oligarch strategy isn't going to work if the source of power gets kicked out of office. So let's try and go into the election with the impression that we're trying really hard.
Yeah.
I think it's calculated. I think it is too little, too late. The mother of all too little, too late.
Yeah.
So, but I think they're trying to say, okay, and there's already evidence that there's bad actors on the platform. So I think they're trying to say, okay, Biden Harris is coming. What can we do? Let's try and pretty up a little bit, because shit has been such a dumpster fire. But here's the problem, Facebook. We have memories.
Yeah.
We have memories of you, Facebook. We're going to take out some photos of just what a menace to society. We have you on tape lying over and over and over. So yeah, I don't think it's going to work. But
the slow roll of this company is what I really am fascinated with. Since the beginning, it's such a slow roll company that it really does
that.
You
love that term, slow roll.
So it's, you know, that's what Pence does. That's Pence's argument. Like, he slows things down to the point of boredom. And I think, you know, she didn't bite on that one, but that's what they've done since Beacon, since everything. It's just they're constantly like, get to it eventually. Like, they did it with Alex Jones, and they did it with, you know, they just wait until it's at a crisis boiling point, and then they step in. And it's just like, I want to be like, just like I want to sort of be in a lot of these meetings around Trump right now. Like, who's next to him taking these photos? Like, I want to physically see what's happening. I would love to be in these meetings where they discuss this, where it's not like, I want to know who the screamy person in the room is, like, what are we doing or not doing? And, or what happens? What's the dynamics of these meetings? And it's just amazing. They also just widened the ban on political ads after the election. They'll banning indefinitely after the polls close political ads on November 3rd.
Although it's not political, enough, though.
It's not. It's
point.
Content. You
100%.
Totos.
You've been making this point.
You know, this new step to limit misinformation, this and that. They just haven't been doing their jobs. It's really just sloppiness.
Shouldn't Twitter and Facebook take down all candidates' accounts, saying this is, we can't have election insecurity. We can't have someone.
They won't do that.
But, well, I don't think they will, but shouldn't they? Shouldn't
I don't
Twitter
know.
Do it?
I don't know. What I think they should do is they took forever to move that Trump was cured, this whole cure thing he's doing now. He's like, he sounds like the guy who sells things late at night in CNN. Like, if you take this, you will have a larger penis. Like,
yeah, but all of a sudden, this is how sad it is. These companies are all of a sudden reaching down and finding their testicles. Because why? Because they realize he's about to lose.
Yeah.
They're totally politically, it has nothing to do with doing the right thing. It has nothing to do with what's happening or not, all of a sudden going, okay, he's going to lose, so we're not going to get the knee pads out, and we are going to actually start acting like, pretend we're fiduciaries, such that when Biden and Harris show up on our doorstep, we can say, see what we did?
Right.
See?
Right. But so what do you think, who are they going to regulate next? Probably white supremacists, they've been trying badly. You know, the Proud Boys got dinged themselves by a bunch of very proud gay guys. Boys, who, what groups will they regulate? It took them forever to do Alex Jones. This QAnon thing took forever. White supremacists take them forever. Is there any, like, do you see anything happening?
Well, in 22 days, we all have the opportunity to regulate the white moronacy movement that has infected our country. What? See what I did what? There? See what I did there? I don't know. I think it, I wouldn't be surprised if the pendulum really swings.
And they overregulate.
Yeah, because there is something to the notion that, okay, offensive stuff is allowed to be offensive.
Yeah, agreed.
But this has gone on so crazy. But I think they probably will. I think they'll outsource it. I think they will actually have a body. I mean, similar to what, I don't know, there's a group at most major media companies that says, okay, we're not going to traffic in this type of content. Yeah. We're not going to bring any oxygen to this. We'll see. What do you think? You're in this business. I'm not.
I think they have no internal ability to do this. I don't think they don't think you think they think like journal. Like there's definitely, we were talking about someone I was going to have on the podcast, and we're like, do we want to give oxygen to that? There's constant discussions about that within media companies. Should we focus on this by giving this group oxygen? And some people argue, oh, you know what? We got to really show people this. Others are like, why? You know, it's a really, it's a constant debate in journalism. Mm-hmm. And it tends to go down the middle. It depends. You know what I mean? And then they ultimately end up covering it. But it's a lot of thoughtfulness goes into what to cover. I don't think there's a bit of thoughtfulness here. I think they just see fires and then they wait for them to burn. And then they, when everything's ruined, they go over and say, throw water on it. I think that's, you know, kind of like a glass of water. And so I think they have no mentality. I've always told this to people. They're talking about years ago when Facebook was putting was working with media companies, where they actually had a studio that Randy Zuckerberg did interviews with people at, because I did one 109 years ago. So they were dabbling in media. And I was like, these people don't care. There's no difference between squirrel videos and your videos and news. They just don't have a differentiation between any of it. And nor do they care. And it's not out of malevolence. It's just out of the way they are. They don't have any idea of what's damaging or what's not. And they don't want to be the ones making the decision. And so they tend to wrap themselves in this bullshit First Amendment stuff that they don't understand correctly. And then call it a day. That's really, I don't understand what else that they do. But they will, I think now, of course, that we've been complaining about this, their tendency will be to overdo it, which has never been the point. It's talking about hate groups. It's talking about things like conspiracy groups and things like that. And that is very different from Marco Rubio posting something stupid, which he does on a daily basis. I have added Marco Rubio, essentially.
This,
you know,
feigning ignorance here doesn't work. There are things they could do. They have absolutely the ability to take the temperature of the volume of content relative to what I'll call the number of people who engage in that issue or the discourse around that issue.
They have lots of signals, is what you're saying.
Well, basically say when the Proud Boys movement is getting 5x amount of content relative to what some proxy around what is the real discourse or the real interest or the number of people who engage in this conversation, or because these aren't legitimate conversations. Mm-hmm. As soon as you start talking about them, trolls and bad actors who want to see America tear at the seams start showing up and trying to pour fuel on it.
Yep.
And so this is a national defense issue that the Russians have laid out in very in stark, meticulous, clear detail in the 80s what they plan to do, and that is find divisions within our society and then pour fuel on it and let us tear ourselves apart. They don't have the ability to tear us apart from the outside, so they'll tear it apart from the inside. And when people, it happens, I think it happens every day on my Twitter account. I think people show up and start trying to start fights.
Yep.
And so it just wouldn't be that hard to go, okay, QAnon is a topic. We could figure out a way, get a bunch of academics to figure out a way. How big an issue is this in our society? And it's X percent of people are interested in a discourse around this. It's getting 40X because bots run by people who are bad actors are showing up trying to make it a bigger and bigger and bigger conversation.
Certainly get enough signals here. They should be able to regulate these things. And again, they do want claps when they do something right. And I'm giving them a tiny little tiny claps, but it's really like if they had read Kevin Roos over the past 2 years, they could have noticed there was a problem. You know what I mean? Or it is the journalists actually pointing and civic groups pointing this stuff out when they have plenty of money to do it themselves. Anyway, thanks Facebook. Thanks. Let's just say thanks to them and like keep it up. But they really do have to focus on more important issues. All right, listener mail. Scott, we have a listener mail question from Hawaii.
You've got,
I can't believe I'm going to be a mailman.
You've got mail.
Aloha, Kara, Scott, and crew. This is Ruth from Puna on the Big Island of Hawaii. I have two boys distance learning this year. And with this new experience, there is a lot of communication apps and learning programs like math diagnostic testing. My question is, who's watching out for our children's privacy? Will my children's Google Classroom account follow them for the rest of their lives? Do we know if the data collected by these companies is sold or shared? Are there any structures in place to protect our kids' privacy in this landscape of online schooling? Mahalo for taking the question. I'm looking forward to your answers. Ohuiho.
Oh, I love Hawaii.
Wasn't that awesome?
Oh, I love Hawaii.
Ruth from Puna.
Hawaii.
Oh, that was awesome.
I love Hawaii so
much. Yeah, you ready?
Well, let me just tell you, Ruth, I don't know. I think one of the issues is I think very few people have been ready for this much long distance learning, whether it's on Zoom or on Google, the Google chats or anywhere else. And most of these schools just grabbed whatever stuff was on the shelf and started using them. Mm-hmm. So there are things you can put in place in the features area to protect things and everything else. But I think it's a big, we don't know what they're using. Presumably, these companies are aware when they're being used by schools and have put structures in place to protect the privacy. But I think this has just been foisted upon us and everybody has been scrambling. Mm-hmm. So good question. And I will ask Google, but I suspect that no, there aren't any structures in place to protect them unless there are features that you click on these things where you can put in. There's all kinds of dashboards you can put in here, but these are not stuff that was designed for privacy. And so one would assume some of it might have been, it's been used for enterprise, but in general, this stuff just started being used without a whole lot of vetting. Mm-hmm. Scott?
I think one of the real tragedies of the novel coronavirus that we'll look back on and think that really registered permanent damage in our society is that one of the wonderful things about public schools K-6 is that roughly speaking, kids from different economic and ethnic groups pace at a similar pace until they get into junior high and high school, and rich kids get access to the kind of college industrial complex. But that, loosely speaking, K-6 on math scores, kids meld, or they melt. And with distance learning, we've seen 50% of low-income kids immediately fall behind in
math.
A
bigger problem than even privacy, I agree.
It's really tragic. And just distinct of even the moral argument, that means we're just 50% less likely to find vaccines. We're 50% likely to come up with wonderful, wonderful therapies. We're 50% likely to solve, you know, economic crises because we are letting a generation of kids fall behind. And anyone who has kids knows your kid comes off the tracks for a year or 2 years, it can kind of haunt them the rest of their lives. It's a competitive economy, and your kids do need to keep tracking. The issue it goes to, and I talked to Professor Sanana Rao last week from MIT, who's a colleague at NYU and is a total gangster, and he was a good guy. He and by the way, just quick plug, he just is coming out with a book called The Hype Machine about Facebook. So the issue of data interoperability is a really big one, and that is at one point you weren't allowed. If you wanted to go from AT&T to Verizon, you couldn't take your phone number with you. And so what did they do? Congress said, that's stupid. That's, you're putting up artificial barriers. You're reducing choice. You're reducing competition. Prices are going up. And so they made it such that you had to be able to, phone companies had to let you port your data, specifically your phone number. And the same thing has to happen here. And it's not only across, all right, I don't like Facebook the way, I'm not down with the way Facebook's behaving. I want to take my contacts, my data, my network to another platform. And the same thing is here. Whatever data is happening, whatever's going, all the content that's being generated online from online learning, it has to be interoperable. It has to be something that could ideally be ported back to the school system, be ported to another platform, be ported to another software company that wants to provide remote learning. But data interoperability, I think, is a bigger issue than privacy here.
Yeah, I think, well, no, because there were huge privacy issues in New York City public school system on Zoom last year. I think, Scott, you're absolutely right. That even my kids are suffering, and they have everything. Like, you can just see them struggling. You know what I mean? Not just with just staring at a screen all day and then doing homework on a screen all day. It's just, it's terrible. People who have means are struggling, and these kids who do not have means, even worse, not just because of how badly these lessons are structured, but also that they're on public networks, that they're on, like, that they struggle to, some kids, if you see these pictures of them sitting outside of a Taco Bell doing things, that's a public network privacy issue. These are private companies, essentially. They're using the tools they're using. Who knows what structures are in place? I don't even think these companies know who's using them, because sometimes it's a book club, sometimes it's a school, sometimes it's this. So we really do need to invest in long distance education via, you know, in remote means, in a significant way that makes it, you know, private. It makes it exciting. It makes it easy to use. It's a real area that everybody talked about working out really well, but really hasn't been. It's just sort of been a, you know, bubblegum and bailing wire situation, including in privacy. So I would be very concerned and make sure you have all your privacy settings, which may not allow you to use some of this stuff. That's one of the other issues. And they're very, it's super complex. I was doing it on my computer this week and I just was lost. And I am good at technology, you know, figuring out what to click and what not to click. And I got all these different privacy things, you know, doing scans of my computer because I was worried about some hacking. And it just is, it's totally complex and you shouldn't have to do this on top of having your kids at home. So we do not have good answers for you, Ruth, but you do live in Hawaii, which is a beautiful place.
Ruth from Puna.
Puna. We really like that. And, you know, we'll see. I think this is another thing our legislators need to look into and our the companies. There's a real opportunity here for a great business, I think. Anyway, Scott, one more quick break. We'll be back for predictions.
Support for this podcast comes from Constant Contact. If you're a business owner, you already know that it's really, really hard to cut through the noise of everyday life. If you want to connect with your customers, you need to break through the noise. You need Constant Contact. Constant Contact is a marketing platform that makes it easy to reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and connect over email, text, social media, and more. Whether you're a marketing guru or just learning the ropes, Constant Contact offers writing assistance tools and automation features that make it simple to say the right thing at the right time. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Wow, that guy means business.
Just an amazing player.
No, not him, the sports photographer behind him.
What?
He has a business bank account with QuickBooks Money where he earns 5% annual percentage yield, so he's scoring big on and off the field. You might even say he's the MVB.
MVB?
The most valuable business.
Making your money work harder. That's how you business differently. Intuit QuickBooks.
Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Okay, Scott, you know what time it is. Give people what they want. Not the fly, a prediction.
Yeah,
not testosterone. There's no testosterone in this prediction.
The most exciting IPO or the most exciting, I don't even call it a public offering of 2021 is going to be Amazon spinning AWS. I do think that antitrust has a lot of momentum. Jeff Bezos is always just sort of feels to me like two, three steps ahead of all of us. I think he's got just, I think he's probably the smartest or, I don't know, most adroit.
Businessman, yeah.
Business mind in history. And I think he's going to say, well, why wouldn't we spin it? Why wouldn't we? And I'll still control it.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a distinct company. I think he'll get out ahead of the curve here. I think most
timing?
Exciting.
I
just said, I think 2021. And by the way, my timing's usually off on this stuff. Time goes faster. Yeah. I suffer from the same flaw our species suffers from, and that is time goes a lot faster than I perceive it's going to go. But I would say next year, he's going to say, okay, I don't need this bullshit. I want everyone focused on work. I'll spin. And not only that, when he spins it, it's kind of like title inflation, and that is a bunch of people are going to, you know, somebody's going to get to be the CEO. Someone's going to get to be the president. Someone's going to. So it'll be. And it'll expand their market because companies like Walmart will consider working with AWS if it's not owned by Amazon.
Yeah, and then they do deals with each other. You know.
That's right.
It was interesting. I was on a panel with John Hennessy. He's on the board of Google, you know, and obviously
the Stanford president?
Yeah, he's the chairman of the board of Google, too.
Yeah.
And he said some things I didn't love, including that people don't vote because they're lazy. But anyway. What he did talk about, and you could see him, is that this idea, I proposed this idea to him that they break up on their own. And he started with the, oh, it's complex. And then I'm like, well, is it? And he's like, well, actually. And then he started to like puzzle it out. And, you know they've been puzzling it out of how to do it. And so he didn't say absolutely not. The first move is no, but then it's not absolutely not, which was interesting. So I think that's a very good prediction. So you think it's going to be Amazon first?
Or unless someone is... Unless someone steps in and does a deal behind the scenes with them and says, you can do this to yourself, or we're going to do it to you.
Yeah.
But I think, look, I just think AWS, I've said, one of my predictions is 2025, the most valuable company in the world is AWS.
Yeah. All right.
And so, he's very shareholder driven. He has $200 billion, but he wakes up every morning and he looks in the mirror and he says, hello, man, we're $300 billion.
Yeah.
I think he's very focused on his own shareholder value.
Don't you think he does that?
I think they're all obsessed with making $1 more.
Yeah.
And not only that, everything they do supports that notion. I mean, they just.
A lot of testosterone, in other words. back to steroids.
I'm back to Barry White.
Oh, my God.
Hello, ladies. Hello, ladies.
You know, I have dated people with deeper voices than you, sir. Anyway.
Really? What's her name?
No, none of your beeswax. Anyway, listen.
I have such a face for
that
podcasting.
That is a great prediction. I think it will come true. I think that one is
You think
sure.
AWS does get spun?
I think they're all going to be like, do we want to spend the next couple of years in
fighting this out?
Fighting this. And we want to get richer. And we're going to get, it's coming. The train is coming. So let's get on it and let's run the train. And that's how they think. And so they will, because they are pumped up on testosterone and they know that this is the inevitability.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Scott, that's the show. Next week, guess who? On Monday, we'll be talking to Fareed Zakaria. I know you're excited. Are you excited?
He's got a big brain. I'm going to faint.
Are you?
I love that guy.
Don't faint. I want you to lead that discussion.
Yeah, I'm kind of intimidated by him.
Well, think up some questions. You have a whole weekend to think up questions for Fareed Zakaria, okay? There's a lot going on, especially, you know, we'll talk about China. We'll talk about lots of stuff. He's quite a erudite person.
Yeah,
anyway, in the meantime, email us with your questions about companies and trends at pivot@voxmedia.com. We appreciate Ruth's question from Hawaii today. Mahalo.
Today's show was produced by Rebecca Sinanis. Fernanda Finite engineered this episode. Erica Anderson is Pivot's executive producer. Make sure you subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts. Or if you're an Android user, check us out on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you liked our show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Pivot from New York Magazine and Vox Media. We'll be back next week for a breakdown of all things tech and business. Little T-shot for the dog.